Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with producer and host Tom Gowker of Something Came From Baltimore. It is a jazz, blues, and R&B podcast and radio show, and it is not really about Baltimore. He has spent the last 6 years amassing listeners to his unique blend of radio and interviews. Tom reached out to Neon Jazz as two like-minded hosts going for the same sort of goals in different parts of the American map, with cities steeped in jazz talent and history. We are cross-pollinating our advertising and stories. You will hear more about this show on Neon Jazz, and we decided it was a great idea to learn more about Tom and the cities we respectively live in. As a result, we talked about the top five jazz acts in both Kansas City and Baltimore, along with so much more. Dig this interview.
First and foremost, to say thank you for reaching out, finding me, and I've really had a chance to delve into what you're doing, and it's so good to have a like-minded individual out there, you know, working for, you know, the world of jazz and blues and beyond. So thank you for reaching out. And I want to know, first and foremost, when you were a kid, we know what you're doing now. Mm-hmm. What did you want to do? What was your dream when you were a kid?
Yeah, I was that kid who was left at the record store shop. Well, my mom would go shopping. I'm like, just leave me at the record store. And I'd look at every single record. I DJed at high school dance parties. I DJed at college. I was the store manager at Camelot Music, if you can remember that, in Record Town. I programmed music at the college radio station. I did production at QVC. I worked at CD Now, which is now defunct, volunteered and then got hired as a part-timer at Live in the World Cafe, volunteered and then started having a show at Morgan State Radio, Jazz 101. So my desire to be in entertainment and music was high, but when I got out of college, either my ability to believe in myself was low or I just needed money that just changed my trajectory. And now I just realized that this is where I belong. Like, I belong in this creative sphere in some way, and I'm not really going to push it aside. So I do have to make money. I do have a full-time job, but I really am focused on feeling more creative and really pushing the boundaries of what I've done. And I guess in the last like 5-6 years, when I had the podcast, I wouldn't tell anyone that I had one. And now any person that walks by me, I'm like, I got a podcast. So I've come a long way, from that time period.
So Something Came From Baltimore has been on for 6 years now. And in this process, as you've explained kind of your history leading up to now, what's been the most surprising part of authoring your own entity and talking to musicians and kind of being in control of something that really brings more attention to a music that you love?
Well, there are bucket list moments where I freak out and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm talking to Joe Lovano or Ali Shaheed Muhammad from A Tribe Called Quest or Mike Watt, the bass player from the Minutemen. They're like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm talking to a hero. Like, people that I totally respect. Oh, Terrence Blanchard. There would be another one that freaked me out. So just the personal high to do that is exciting. What I found in the last 6 years is that I'm really focused on what's going on now in jazz world. And I found that the international world, the people who are in international countries, are really like being very creative and exciting. So I'm focusing a lot on that. I'm working on people who are really like just recording. Oh, I can't think of the word. Experimental music, which doesn't really translate well in interviews because, you know, it's like, hey, we just did this live in the studio. And then I'm like, okay, well, we're going to play 15 seconds of this, 20-minute song. So it doesn't translate that well, but I'm giving it a shot. And I just feel that now I'm a part where people trust me enough that if I'm focusing on an artist, that this artist is high quality because I won't put on anything I don't like.
Yeah, what I've noticed, too, you know, along those lines is that there's been a level, especially over the pandemic, a level of electronica and a level of, you know, people pushing boundaries that you may not have ever heard before. Have you noticed that kind of innovation going on? I mean, that's the thing I heard from musicians. You just wait until we're done with this pandemic to hear what's coming out. And it's been coming out. Maybe we're too close to this time period still, but it seems like it's happening.
It's interesting how it, like, pieces are moodier, you know, because the pandemic was really kind of, you know, very scary for us. It was, oh God, it was like something we've never experienced before. So when it came to musicians, you know, people were just sat at home, and I'm finding the material that comes out, it's surprising when it's like kind of joyous or uplifting. There are a lot of moodier pieces that are coming out. I think that just kind of reflected the times.
What do you hope if we have a conversation in, let's say, 5 years from now, and, you know, podcasts are taking off. I think people are embracing radio. I think over this pandemic, people realize the power of radio. And this is the thing that's interesting. I'm going to get to this question, but I just kind of want to segue this. I went and saw Bobby Watson do a show rather early in the pandemic in 2020. Maybe it was in that summer around June. And it was at a thing called Plex Pod here in Kansas City. And it was an outdoor thing where people parked, we were separated, everything was safe, and they were up on stage. And I walked by at one point, and I had a Downbeat shirt on. And some guy that looks like he doesn't listen to jazz kind of says, "What is that on your shirt?" And I said, "Oh, it's Downbeat. It's a magazine." And the way he was asking me and the way he looked, I thought he was messing with me. And he was like, "Well, what does that mean, though?" And I was like, "Well, it's just kind of the jazz Bible. It's like it dispenses reviews and all of these things related to jazz." He was like, "Oh, okay, cool, man." And I could tell after I answered that, he was real and he was genuinely asking me this. As I talked to him, he's there with his 16-year-old daughter. He said that over the pandemic, they got a radio show from Kansas. And they would listen to it at night, and they totally fell in love with jazz. And they heard about this show, and they went, and they are so happy that they did it. So in a long-winded way here, what I'm saying is that I think over this time, people kind of went back to roots, and roots in this country is really what we would consider radio. And I think there's been kind of a rebirth, so to speak. So you have a radio show, you have a podcast. You're dispensing this audio that people are more hungrier than ever for. We talk in 5 years. What are you hoping to see happen with what you're doing?
During that time period, you know, it was really gloomy. And what I did was something really interesting where I focused on local artists. So there was a Netflix show called Dark City Beneath a Beat. And it was just it focused on artists of the dance music scene in Baltimore. And TT the artist, I interviewed her. She's the one that produced it. And then I reached out to artists. I'm like, look, we have amazing artists in our backyard, and here's 11 of them. So I interviewed them, and we played their music live so they can kind of get a feeling of, like, what's going on in the neighborhood and realize that, you know, there's, like, five-star entertainment just right down the street. And not to draw this question out a little longer, at a five-year plan at this point is, you know, please podcast people. I got 60,000 subscribed, but it normally is about 10,000 that listen. And, you know, so people subscribe. And what I find is that people a month later, they'll cycle through things. They'll put it on. So my numbers almost double within a month or two. But, you know, I really would like to do this full time. I mean, personally, my passion level is so high that this is my baby at this point that, boy, would I like to just, you know, do this and branch out into different areas in the entertainment business.
Maybe this is a natural segue here. You know, at this point, just so everybody understands, you know, we've discovered who we are. We're on board, and you're going to start hearing promos on our shows, our interviews in regards to cross-pollinating and opening up listenership to what we're doing. And there's things that are very similar to what we're doing, you know, of interviewing musicians and exposing this art form more. And in that vein, you're coming from Baltimore, I'm coming from Kansas City, and you had broached and brought the idea of introducing five of the top artists from this city, each respective city. So maybe before we do that, we just kind of talk a little bit about the scene in each respective city, and I'll start with you with Baltimore.
Well, the scene is completely fractured by the pandemic. The scene is peppered with bullet spray. You know, we're a very violent and kind of scary little town right now. So with that, you know, it's hard to get people feel comfortable coming into the city to, you know, who are older and more mature, to park their car in a downtown area that just got, you know, shot up the day before. So we're in a spot right now that is not conducive to art. Baltimore is just in a little bad place, and it trickles down into everything. You know, the clubs are not as crowded, and people still don't have money. You know, the money of the pandemic, we've all blew through that. So everyone is still like the jazz places are not completely full. They're not as many of them that there were. People are really having a tough time getting gigs. With that in mind, we have fantastic artists that are all over the place, but you know, we're not there yet. And I don't know, it's been a while since we've been there, but there was a time that Baltimore was the warehouse of DC and also New York, where New York artists would live in Baltimore because it was cheap and easy to commute around the East Coast. And even that, you know, the rent or the houses got expensive, along with the violence that is going around here, that people kind of bolted out of Baltimore. So that answer is really to be continued. Baltimore has a fantastic music scene, and it's just struggling right now.
Just contextually speaking, before we get to the top five, you know, Kansas City, as you very well know, is one of the original cradles of jazz, and we've gone through growing pains throughout the years. I mean, there's always kind of been that prevailing mentality of, you know, Bird and the early days and the Battle of the Bands. Robert Altman came here and filmed the mobster movie and kind of threw a little razzle onto it. And of course, that was really good for us because 18 and Vine is the hub. And, you know, Hollywood came in and like redid. I mean, they were movie sets, but they kind of cleaned that area up, so to speak. But there's also the same thing that happens at 18 and Vine. And I don't want to elongate too much on that, but I need to be real. I remember seeing Vijay Iyer one night in the winter, and we came out, my wife and I came out of the show, and we heard gunshots down the way, and we were both like, oh, shit, and we'd like booked it harder, and it was snowing a little bit, you know. So, but overall, you know, we have that district, we have the Green Lady Lounge, we have other things that are going on, and there is a wonderful crop of cats here. Bobby Watson was in charge of the University of Missouri Kansas City's jazz program, and he stepped down, but while he was here, he fostered such a wonderful crop of musicians that stayed here. And it's brought other cats in, like Adam Larson from New York and other people that are staying here. And the one thing that's hallmark even right now that's happened kind of because of the pandemic that's really cool about Kansas City is there's this thing called Jazz at Noon. There's a recital series that happens at the Johnson County Community College. I mean, Kansas City, as far as like, you know, landmass, we're quite huge as a greater Kansas City area. So there's a local community college, and there's great people. I saw Leslie McLean, who is a musician, a pianist. She had a trio with her. She played the other day. Lynn Zimmer's an old-time clarinetist that's been around for a long time. And down on 18 of Vine at the Blue Room, Matt Hopper is a very well-known guitarist that's going to play today. And that's the Jazz at Noon Thursday series, and there's the Jazz at Noon Tuesday series. It's all free, and everybody's welcome. The crowds have been getting much bigger. But Kansas City remains very vital, and when I explain to people what's going on here, they're like, wow. They either kind of knew about it or they don't, and they're like, wow, that's wonderful. So the scene here and the way the musicians interact, it's very – they foster an environment where they support each other, and they really want people to do well. And I think that brings people that may leave Kansas City to a bigger place like New York or L.A. or wherever they go to finally come back and say, man, this is the kind of environment I want to be in. That's what Kansas City is right now in 2022.
I thought so. You know, Casey has such a great reputation, a historical reputation, that it's weird how there are some amazing pockets throughout the country that is just like a jazz heaven. Like, it's really interesting, and I'm glad that Casey, you know, has that. There are pockets throughout the country. I know the East Coast corridor, I was told by many artists, is very fruitful for them, that they have rabid fans. So all the way up to Boston, down to like Richmond, like any artist will hit these as many clubs as possible, to hit Philly and to DC and Baltimore area. There are some people who will hit Columbia, Maryland, which is like 12 miles away from Baltimore, then Baltimore, and then also DC. They're all like in 3 days in a row, and they're all just basically, you know, 12 miles away. The fan base in this area is crazy. So it's great that I like the idea of what we're doing about like focusing our attention on hot spots throughout the country. And that's kind of what we started out with, this whole concept of like interviewing each other, kind of.
Yeah. So we have a top five, and I think the thing that I ran into that I want to make very clear as I get into this top five is, you know, I think sometimes when you do these lists, and I noticed this when I interview musicians, I used to be like, you know, I don't even know if I did do the question where I was like, what's the five albums that you would pick or whatever? It's such a hard thing to do. It's more of, what's the last thing that you listen to? What's the last thing you put on your turntable? Or what concert would you like to see if they come through live? Things like that open it up. So what I want to say with this top five, and I'm sure you feel the same way, there is an enormous amount of musicians that exist within this Kansas City community. And what I've done for what we're doing here is I've pulled the five people out that I would say, if anybody was to come through town and they look through one of our dailies or Facebook events or whatever, these are the five people that I would highly recommend that are high octane, full on, great people that you have to see if you come and get involved with here and you have your plate of barbecue. That's kind of where I'm coming from with my list.
Oh yeah, it's hard. There's a series that I'm doing that is something similar. Someone asked me who my favorite Miles Davis album was. Like, give me your top five Miles Davis albums. And the first thing that came to my head was Decoy, which I know is probably the 30th, you know, hot album of Miles Davis. But that was just my interpretation. That was my first Miles Davis album I ever bought. So everything's subjective. And at this point, there's so many artists that are like, if they listen to this, they're like, you skipped me. And I don't want to get into that point. I just wanted to say these people are probably going to break out nationally, and that you want to be the first person to, you know, say, hey, you know, I was checking them out in Baltimore and now I see that they have a national presence. So that's kind of where I went with mine.
Let's start with you. Let's kind of go, we'll go top five. We'll kind of toggle back and forth if that's okay with you. So let's start in Baltimore. We'll come back to Kansas City. We'll kind of crisscross and get some frequent flyer miles as we toggle our way to number five.
Awesome. All right. So before we do that, I just want to caveat just a little thing that we have Go-Go down the street. So we have amazing artists just about, you know, 20 miles away from us. We have national artist presence that live in Baltimore right now, which is Sean Jones, Lafayette Gilchrist, Todd Marcus, who has just put a brand new album out, and Warren Wolf, who is kind of crisscrossing the city. We have legendary people who I believe live here, you know, off and on. Is Dennis Chambers, amazing drummer for P-Funk and Fusion, Chester Thompson, who played drums for Genesis, Michael Formanek, who is all over the place, amazing bass player, Mesa is an awesome vocalist, and Cyrus Chestnut. If I could interview any of those people I just talked about, they'd be bucket list material. We have elders here that kind of like do what he was doing in KC, to really corral the people and kind of drive it, which is Chris Fun. He was a teacher in the area. Rufus Roundtree, who played with P-Funk, and amazing drummer named Eric Kennedy, who's basically on any kind of jam that goes on in Baltimore. Then I have Friends of the Pod, who have been really great, like gracious and give their time to me multiple times for interviews, which is Gregory Tompkins, who does SAC. He's also a professional teacher. And Seth Keibel, who does klezmer and clarinet. Robert Shahid is a drummer and a DJ at Morgan State. So I wanted to get all them in because I'm like, okay, if they didn't hear their names, I think I'd get shot. Or, well, shot for real. Baltimore shot.
I just quickly want to say, Sean Jones has been really in the news here in Kansas City. He's playing with the Kansas City Jazz Orchestra, and it's been a big deal. He's been really hitting the media circuit hard here in town.
Yeah, he's awesome. And one of the first interviews that I ever had. And we did a really fun show. And that's, if people do listen to my podcast, I'm not a musician. So I just want to make jazz fun and interesting. And I think when people realize when I interview them, they're like, oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Let's have fun. You know, it changes the whole premise. It's like, you know, we're not talking about notes or scales. We're just talking about feelings and thoughts and having a laugh. So,
well, and I think they respect that. And that's what my aim is, to get to the soul of the musician, because I think sometimes there's a part of them, as much as they want to talk shop, they may want to do that with the musician. But if they really want to get to the essence of things, I think it's a good departure for them to feel as though they can walk into something that's comfortable and say, hey, you know, this is who I am. This is the reason why the notes come out of my horn.
Yeah, I love your show. That's why I contacted you.
So, well, thank you.
All right, so we're going to get into... There's this one person that you just interviewed that I interviewed before, and I am having a senior moment. But I wanted to piggyback on him. He's so good. I was listening to it yesterday. Oh, Owen Broder. He came to town with his sax group, and I watched him, and I contacted him, and we talked about his album, but that's about 3 years ago. He's a great interview because he's real thoughtful. You don't have to edit him out. Anything
no.
he says.
No, you don't. And uh-huh. He gets to the point, and yeah, he's wonderful. And he really, I mean, it was that expose that he just did on Johnny Hodges, and it's interesting because Hodges is so intertwined with Ellington, so it was kind of cool that he singularly pulled him out and kind of, yeah, so, yeah, Owen's a great cat for sure.
Yeah, he's just plugging away. He's going to be a force in the industry.
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
So let's get into it. So these are the top five, not the top five best. These are people who are probably going to break out within the next 2 to 3 years or so. And then you're like, well, I knew about him first. And that's a good feeling. The first person that I have listed is The first person I have is Clarence Moore III. He's a multi-instrumentalist. He is really just kind of dominating the whole Baltimore scene. He's playing everywhere with a band called That Feel Good, which is like a fusion group, but he's phenomenal. His presence on stage is very electrifying. It's not a show. It's real. But you are kind of mesmerized. Now, when it comes to Clarence, like, I've talked to him a couple times, and I am nervous around him when I see him around. Like, I look at him as like a star. Like, oh my God, he's a star. And I told him, I said, dude, I'm always going to act like you're a star, so just get over it. You're going to see me around. I'm going to watch all your shows, but I can't help thinking that you're a star. So that's a good thing. He just put out a new release. It's called Malignant Love. I know that they're working on some kind of documentary about him, and his personal backstory is fantastic and really interesting. Clarence Ward III.
My list is really going to kind of like begin with somebody that probably the world should know more about. They probably will. And he's referenced quite a bit here in Kansas City as being the best on the instrument. And that's Peter Schwamm. He plays the vibe and he plays the piano. He's a regular here. He's kind of a part of a crop of cats that, kind of all were here in probably the early 2000s. And have really kind of taken off. But he exists in different incarnations of bands, Herman Mahari is a trumpet player that's moved on to Paris. He still comes back to Kansas City. He's kind of a part of that group, but he is wonderful with what he does. He does both, you know, the acoustic vibes and the electronic. And here at Neon Jazz, we have a very defined bias for vibes. We love them. So it's not just because of that, but it's because Peter has really like risen up into a way where other musicians get very bespeckled by him. I've always loved what he's done, but I remember one time in particular, Joe Locke came in to the Blue Room, and I remember this show specifically because it was on the day of my son's birthday, whose name is Miles, and it was December 8th, and I could just tell that Joe and the band, they were kind of just, they were very nervous. And I had never really met him in person, but we met, and he was wonderful. And I kind of heard through the grapevine that they're waiting for a vibes, a set of vibes to come through. And Peter had to do it, and his leg was broken. And it's cold out, and he comes in, and he brings it in. Somewhere in the shuffle of bringing the vibes in, it didn't happen for Joe. So Peter came in. But that's just kind of the cat he is. He's a blue-collar guy. You don't get this feeling that there's an international glow around him, but there genuinely is. He's a wonderful cat.
All right, I'm gonna sample him. I'm not familiar with him.
Okay.
All right, my number two is just he's a part of the Daisy Age. I think before De La Soul and the Tribe Called Quest, he must have been born that time period. He's a young guy, but the spirit of that communal love and harmony is a part of him. His name is Aaron Hill, and he's a keyboard player. He's front of the band, the Fruition Experience. He's a part of that Feel Good. He has a self-care program that he's working on called 5M. He's a mind, body, and spirit therapist, and he does something that I think is amazing. He does pop-up jam sessions throughout the city. He's done over 100+ where he just appears on a corner with his group, and they play for like an hour. He's really amazing, and he has outgrowth where he's a musician, but he's also really into, you know, self-care and also like mental health. The single that kind of popped out, the last thing that he did solo, came out on March 14th, 2022, called Contemplation. He can go in any direction. He could be a smooth jazzer if he wanted. He could be a gospel dude. He can do fusion, and he can do ambient, drone, atmospheric. He can do it all.
So my number two is Lonnie McFadden. Lonnie McFadden, he's a part of the McFadden brothers, but Lonnie's really stepped out on his own. He is probably one of the best pure entertainers I've ever seen in person. Around the pandemic, after it happened, he got approached by the Ambassador Hotel, and they said, you know, do you want to set up a club themed after you? And he thought, this guy was crazy. You know, we're in the middle of a pandemic. No one knows what's going on. So as a testament to who he is and how big he is here and just his spirit, which is wonderful, he decided to set it up and called it, Club Reno. And that harkens back to the early days of Kansas City. And it was in the basement of this hotel. So it's all themed after him. He has a great set of cats around him. He taps. He plays the trumpet. He sings. He's wondrous. My wife actually took me for our anniversary a few years ago. We saw the show firsthand. And it's a full meal, and you get to see him, and it's unbelievable. Now, he'll play at other – well, he used to play at, like, the Green Lady and the Black Dolphin, which is clubs here in town. And he would pack it, and it was unreal. He just has a way of connecting with people. And, you know, I talked to him offstage. Lonnie is a wondrous human being, and he is most definitely somebody that anybody should come see here because he is transformative in a way that a national act would be. Like, if you went to see – you know, a Motown act or something like that. There is a dynamic aspect to what he does that genuinely pushes and keeps the lore of Kansas City intact, but he pushes it to a whole other level in this modern era.
Wow. Wow. That's exciting. I'm going I can't wait. I got to get to KC. Our number three right now, he's touring. There's a group called Cigarettes After Sex, and he's the opening act with another artist. The band is called The Furniture. which is a very atmospheric kind of Cocteau Twinsy kind of jazz. He's a session man. He's been all over the place. He's with Odd Man Out, which doesn't have a recording yet, but has Michael Formanek also on bass. Turd Marlin. Yes, Turd Marlin is a band, and he's a part of that. John Dirk with the Mike Cool duo. Kraft is where I found him, which was an improvisational quartet. And it was just like amazing. Kraft is spelled just like Kraft cheese, K-R-A-F-T. And the band was like Dave Ballou, John with on trumpet, John Decker on reed, and then Luke Stewart on bass. And we're talking about Mike Cool, and it's not K-O-O-L or C-O-O-L. It's K-U-H-L. And he's a drummer who can do anything, and he's really pushing the limits as to where he's at and where he's going. The last thing he recorded was From the Furniture, and the album came out last January. And a single that's like doing really well is called Gumdrop. And there's another single that's really doing well called Strum, S-T-R-O-M.
So my number three is Rod Fleeman. And Rod's an old-time guitarist, I mean, from back from the day. But he gets on that stage and he goes. He sits in with the Kansas City Jazz Orchestra. He does things in trio quartet formats. He's all over town. And he was the guitarist to go to. I don't know if he is anymore. I don't know where Marilyn May is in her life, but he is the guitarist that has traveled with her more. And Marilyn May is another that's just, you know, one of those singers that is one of the best ever that's from here. She's in New York, and she's kind of like made it with the hipsters, and she is like totally cool and totally kind of avant in that almost Streisand way for the jazz world. And I've seen her live, and man, she is just, she's from an era that's just not here anymore. Like if you saw Benny Goodman, you would be like, there's no way I'll see anything like that in my life. And Rod's been backed a lot of people up. He is just one of those guys that when he gets up there and he starts going on that guitar, you're like, wow. I mean, this guy is like, just unlocks this portal within him and he goes. I mean, he was one of the guys that really kind of, you know, taught an early Pat Metheny before he moved on to where he was going. I mean, he is like the predecessor to jazz guitar in Kansas City, an absolute gem and a must-see if anybody comes to this town.
This is a dream of mine to go to KC. Ever since the TV show Sweet, I wanted to go eat there and check out some good music.
Yeah.
I heard that the show was canceled. There was some kind of drama with the son murdering someone. But other than that, I want to still eat there.
Yeah. That'll get in the way, won't it?
No, I can still enjoy the food. But
yeah, right on.
Okay. My number four and five are a combination because they're a brother and sister duo. They're not really, well, they're a duo because they're from the same lineage. Eben Dorsey is 18 years old. She's a band leader. She plays sax and she's a composer. She got a free ride at the Johns Hopkins Peabody. Her brother is 1 year older. It's Ephraim Dorsey. He's 19 years. He plays tenor sax. He's also a composer and a leader. And they have, well, when I worked at Morgan State, like I volunteered at the fun drive, and they were like maybe, oh God, seven, like I swear they were 10 years old. And they were like, oh, you're going to need to know who these kids are. And then years passed, and now they're headlining. I've interviewed them on my show, and you know, their dream was always to work with Kamasi Washington, and they've done that already. And I reached out to them. I said, oh, if we play a segment, what would you like to hear? And it was them on stage with Kamasi. The song is called Change of the Guard. They're the NYO jazz, you know, just talking about Sean Jones. He kind of spearheads that in the summer. And Eben Dorsey did a song off the album that came out this year called Art of War, and War Transitions, either of them can be played. But they're, they have a lot of pressure because they've been dubbed the future of jazz or the face of jazz, the current face of jazz. They're just little kids. I mean, well, I hate to say it. 18 and 19, I call little kids. And they're finding their way. And I hear them jam a lot. On Mondays, they play at Our House, which is like a free jam session. And they're growing and developing kind of like right in front of my eyes. It's really kind of cool to see how they come in and just kind of just blow people away.
Adam Larson came to Kansas City from New York, big time dude. And he has a couple of albums and a series that he's released with Love from Chicago, with some very esteemed Chicago cats, and then with Love from Kansas City. He is a powerful, powerful player, you know. And I think he was a little relieved that he was here in Kansas City during the pandemic, because the economy here is very different from New York, and I think a lot of musicians suffered and went through that. But at any rate, you know, when he plays vocally here, it is just an explosive thing. He's one of those guys that pushes the envelope in a very defined way, and he is just a very welcome guy here that I think people are still kind of pinching themselves that he's here and he's doing what he's doing and he continues to evolve. He's a teacher and a musician. And speaking of teacher and musician, the great Bobby Watson just released a brand new album. It's kind of as a homage to Kansas City. I was very relieved to see that in the mail the other day. And the name of that album is Back Home in Kansas City. And, you know, when he retired back in early 2020, I interviewed him, and he was gearing up to retire from UMKC, and he had all of these things that he was going to do, albums and going to New York and all that, because he comes from that Art Blakey fame. And he was with Art, and he was really a national guy with Kansas City roots, but he came back to teach here, stayed here, and he's really cultivated. I would say if we look at Kansas City right now with its vibrancy and relevancy and not only pushing the envelope but holding on to what we had that the world knows Kansas City has, the number one person that did that, the glue, was Bobby Watson. He is paramount. He is a statue-worthy guy for this town. So the fact that he's back and he's got another album is wonderful. I just recently saw him cap off the Charlie Parker week with a live show at a distillery called Tomstown in downtown Kansas City, and it was wondrous. So, yeah, those are my final two that round out the top five. And, yeah, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Bobby Watson's wife is also a very talent also.
Pam, absolutely.
Yeah, like she's Steve Swallow and Carla Blight kind of duo, where they're just constantly creative, being creative. Awesome. So this is exciting. I'm glad we were able to connect the two cities, give people an idea as to what's going on. Even though I had a gloom and doom, I'm really, I'm just giving an honest approach as to what I've seen in the past and where we're at now. We have brighter days ahead, and, you know, we have just a rabid fan base, and, you know, we have DC down the corner that just is a melting pot of just really some amazing music.
Yeah, it's interesting. And before we leave and depart Carla Bley, I actually landed an interview with her a while back, and it was serendipitous. It was almost like something that just the stars aligned. That interview to this day is one of the most mind-blowing interviews I've ever had. I mean, she truly, in word, is the epitome of what she does in music. It's like there was a couple of times where she would answer something, and it took me a couple of seconds to respond. I was like, wow, you know. But I will say that there are people in town that cover jazz that don't feel the way I do about the jazz scene. It can be very disheartening because the numbers are low. And, but at the end of the day, I think that it is a melding of both of the worlds that exist. And I find that doing neon jazz is that when I hear jazz shows, sometimes it's like we do kind of get bespeckled by this old world that used to exist in jazz, but it's just as vibrant today. And I think stitching both of those together is very essential. Mm-hmm. Same thing with visual arts too. You know, you can't just say, oh, we're going to stop at Van Gogh. No,
yeah.
We have a lot of people that are doing things today in all kinds of artistic venues and menu that it just should continue to evolve. And I think that's what we both are celebrating, is the evolution of what we would consider one of America's very finest inventions, which is jazz music.
Yeah. Yeah. That, you know, it's you look at that art form. I totally agree. You look at the art form and you're like, okay, well, it's not, it's not Blue Note Records from the 50s. There are amazing stuff going on right now, and that's the thing that gets me excited, is like, what is going on right now? And the fusion of electronics and you know, the ability to do like some avant-garde pieces, or and just kind of come up with some really creative ideas. It's pretty awesome. And I love the you know, I'm really focused on like European artists. This is not their medium, you know. Jazz came from America, and so they are, you know, just, you know, looking at things from afar and taking it in a different direction, which I think is even cooler. So it's not theirs, but you know, they have a lot of respect for it, and then they turn around and create something new and interesting. So I like that too.
Yeah, and those European crowds genuinely have a love and zeal for jazz that just doesn't exist here. I mean, that's the beauty of what they're doing. And I was just thinking about Kamasi Washington, about modern jazz and where we're at. I think we all would hope that it would be more embraced by maybe younger audiences and more overall. And I remember my stepdaughter had a friend that knew I did a show, a jazz show, and got very excited and said, I picked up this Kamasi Washington album. And I was like, all right, you know, I mean, it's like those kinds of cats that are really blending, you know, a lot of things that I think Miles was trying to do towards the end of his life is happening. And that baton has been pushed on through Theo Kroeker and other cats that are doing things like that. I think it's very, very important, you know, for us and what we do to shine a light on that. There was a Pluto Juice. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's a super group out of New York. And I heard their album towards the beginning of the year, and I was like, wow, this is amazing stuff. And it's a super group, and they are making a sound that I've never heard before. I mean, it's sonically just all over the place, but right there in front of you, that it's like the future dancing in front of you. It's like a Twilight Zone episode, which I don't know how CBS ever agreed to run that show back in the day. It's like it's that cutting edge. But at any rate, it's good. It's good to see evolution and things moving.
The part that we're dealing with or grappling with is the whole Spotify world. So, you know, when I bought that Decoy album, I bought it with my own money. I took it home, and it was my only Miles Davis album. So I played it, you know, nonstop, and knew every single song and step by step. And so there was a appreciation in a different way, and now we're in a Spotify world where I'm combing, you know, playlists, and I'm like, oh, I like that song. Oh, I like that song. Who's that? So I don't know if I like it or I hate it. I can't decide. That the personalization of it, it becomes more of a less personalized and more of a melting pot where, okay, this vibe feels good. Oh, I like this. And then the who that artist is becomes secondary, as opposed to, wow, this is a Miles album, and let me dig into it. What does Miles have to say? So I believe that jazz is going through that, is that where a lot of people who are young guys are way into jazz and because it feels good or what this is. But if you ask them who the artist, they're like, I don't really know who this is. I just really like what I'm hearing.
So Decoy was originally recorded in 84. They have a 2022 remaster.
I get picked on Decoy all the time. So
oh no, I'm so glad you brought it up. I mean, I named my only son after Miles. So deeply woven way.
Wouldn't you say that's probably in the top 30, like number 30 of the best albums of all time?
Oh yeah.
It's not great.
Well, but the thing about Miles is that I think you really need to listen to it. And the irony of me saying that is this. Of all of the interviews that I've had, I don't like to go headlong into people that have been with Miles because it's just not fair to them. I want them to do it. But in roundabout ways, I can get them, or they on their own will start talking about Miles. And they talk about the thing that was the best about Miles Davis was that he could listen like no other. And it's weird to hear that, but it's very key into how he was so innovative. And I think that's the thing about Miles. If you listen to these albums that aren't way up on the list of things that people listen to, it's going to hit you. It will make sense, whether it's Bitches Brew or whatever it is. Sketches of Spain. It's like you just need to listen and see what he was doing. Why? Because he always assembled the best musicians that were alive on the planet at the time, and he had a sonic plan. It was a map. And if you really hone in, it'll make sense as to why it is what it is.
I agree. So, we're going to not use this part, but that's where I was like, I wrote down 30 albums of Michael Franks album that I think is amazing, that is not like no one else would think is amazing. So it was just a matter of, through being a music fan, just falling in love with something. And I was like, oh, I'm going to do that next year, where I pop in, instead of an interview, just like a 15-minute blurb of, talking about Decoy and why it's great for me. And, that kind of has a lot to do with what people are into right now, that they're finding artists that mean a lot to them. And like, they may love a Joe Lovano song, but they don't really know who he is.
But we'll stay in touch. We'll keep this wheel moving.
Yeah, definitely. We got a friend.
Cool, man.
I got a friend in KC.
Absolutely, right. Man. Cool, Tom.
I'll talk to you later.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in Baltimore, Kansas City, and spots all over the world giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Tom for reaching out, for his time, music, and cool. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino on the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.